Hello and welcome to Rony Zone Radio, Episode 2. We have a great show this time, and we're going to be talking about an actor who's had parts in 119 television shows, including one of the best original Twilight Zone episodes ever made. He's also played in some films and many plays, and we're going to be talking about what's so interesting about him and a connection he has to me. We're also going to be having some great music, and I just want to take just a couple of seconds and thank the folks for their response to the show. I really appreciate it. This is a brand new venture for me, and I appreciate your thoughts and input as far as making this show better. Now, today on Rony's Own Radio, we have two wonderful guests. We have Colleen Rony.
Hi.
And we have Michael Robinson.
Good morning.
We are going to be talking about, for the first part of this, we're going to talk about The Twilight Zone. Probably one of the greatest sci-fi shows on TV of all time. And I just wondered if maybe we could talk about what your favorite episode would be.
There's a few of them I like. I don't know a lot of the names of most of them, but there was one that I thought was really fascinating. It was the gentleman was good-looking, or it was a woman. I can't remember which one it was. But anyway, ends up in the hospital, and the doctors are pig people. They have smushed up faces, and they look like pigs. And
right. He
thinks that he's got this problem, that he looks just like them, and it turns out that they're the normal people, and he's, you know, considered ugly. So he's forced to go to an island. That's one of my favorites. Probably another favorite of mine is one of the more popular episodes that's always requested, and that is To Serve Man.
Oh, right. The one with, we think the aliens are good, and there's a book, and it says To Serve Man, and we think that they're here to serve us and all that. You know, what's interesting is there was a very famous character actor in that one.
Right.
His name was what was it?
Bart Robinson.
Bart Robinson. Now, who is he to you?
He was my grandfather.
Ah, your grandfather. So, ta-da, today's show we're going to be talking about Bart Robinson, I am related to him by marriage, and we're going to talk about some stories about who he was and what his passions were and the breadth of his work in Hollywood, radio, theater, etc. Let's talk about, now, Michael, of course, knew Bart really well because
better than me.
I happen to be his son.
That's right. You are his son. So we're going to tell some insider stories, some family stories probably you wouldn't get on IMDb. Let's start in New York. Now, Margot, which is Mike's mom, started out as a dancer in New York, correct?
That's right.
Okay.
Yes.
And she went there because why?
In high school, she found it necessary to teach some, to make a little extra money to help the family out. She happened to teach ballroom dancing and horseback riding. And this led her to New York, where she wound up as a chorus girl on a dancing team and a chorus line in New York, and Dad just happened to be in a play in which she was a member of the chorus, and that's where they met.
Okay. Love at first kick, I guess. Okay.
I haven't heard it quite that way, but it's quite possibly relevant.
Now, your father's love was theater.
His first love was theater.
First love was theater.
Spent 25 years actually on theater and in the theater in New York.
Okay. What are some of the plays that he was in, some of the people that he worked with?
Oh, he worked with a young lady that I named Lillian Gish. There were two shows that I know that he was in, that she was in, and Dad was in them. Another Part of the Forest and Camille. And he worked with Catherine Cornell. He worked with Helen Hayes, all these names you've heard before. Mm-hmm. Henry Fonda and he were in a play together. The list goes on and on and on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He had quite a few.
Among them, Prescott Proposals. I believe that was Catherine Cornell. The list, I can't remember. This is quite some time ago.
Definitely an interesting point for the listeners is that the one thing that always struck me about Bart was that he was a character actor, meaning he could play a general, scientist, the father, whatever the role was, but his voice was distinctive. And Mike also has that same timbre of voice. So it's kind of interesting to listen to you and also watch your dad on TV and hear, you know, that similar voice. I mean, it's distinctive. You can hear it in another room, and you know it's him. So
absolutely. And well, and people on radio can't hear this, but people on radio can't see this, right. But Dad actually looks quite a bit like Grandpa.
True.
I've always
speaking of radio.
Resemblance there. You know,
Dad just had to do radio for about 25 years also, yeah. Or more. And he was on many different radio shows over the course of time. Some of the people listening might recall Portia Faces Life, where he would play Walter Manning.
And of course, the most important one.
Romance of Helen Trent, Johnny Dollar.
Perry Mason.
And he was the first voice of given to Perry Mason, mm-hmm. back in 1943. Thank you, Colin.
Yes. That's the one most everyone knows. Oh my goodness, he was the first guy to ever bring Perry Mason to life? Yeah, pretty much.
And, you know, we were kind of talking about this before we went on, is that most actors love the theater because it is instantaneous. And what you do, you have a reaction.
You're at one with the audience.
Right.
You know what the audience feels.
True.
They know what you're feeling, and you can play to that. Mm-hmm. He loved Moss Hart. He did a play of his called Light Up the Sky back in 45 or 46. And Moss Hart was such a great playwright. And I had the opportunity to meet Moss Hart when I was a very young boy.
Mm-hmm.
And many of the people he worked with, it was an exciting time to go in. And every summer was great. The cast of the play he was in, the radio shows he was in, the crew, whoever, he'd bring them all out to where we lived in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
We had a clam bake on the island, mm-hmm. which is pretty New England. Great New England memories that I can bring up, and that was great to have these people out there and to visit with them. Even as a little boy, it was exciting.
You were telling me a story about your dad was in a play, I think it was, where he died in the first act, or was it a
total? Yeah, Dad was. I don't remember the name of the play.
Right.
It was back in the early 50s. Dad was killed in the first act of one play. And he drew his own Christmas card every year, and on the Christmas card it showed him one of the scenes on it, running down the street, combing his hair, changing mm-hmm. his makeup and his costume, his clothes, to enter the second act of a play that was down the road in another theater a couple blocks down the street,
yeah.
in Broadway. And he was a working actor.
That's
true. It was fun.
True.
He did radio all day long, theater every night, in addition to the Wednesday and Saturday matinees.
Hmm.
And so, unfortunately, I didn't see my dad much as a kid,
hmm.
because he was always working. But it was exciting when we did see him, because when they opened new shows before they went to Broadway, we always went several times, at least three times I can recall. Went to Philadelphia, to Washington D.C., and to Boston before it went to New York. So we got a chance mm-hmm. to visit those cities, the historical parts of the cities, to visit during the day. See his play at night, stay at a nice hotel, and it was kind of exciting particularly for a young kid.
Sure.
And it was one of the things we did in our life that I really loved.
Now, you had said that there was a phone call because of he was on a Philco Playhouse Theater, I think it was, something like that, American Playhouse. He did a live TV play.
There were several live TV shows going at that time. In New York, and they were taped, and there was a live one-hour production, fewer commercials than they have today.
Mm-hmm.
The Cinema Playhouse, and Playhouse 90, Philco,
right, yeah.
among others, and those were the best known. And Dad did a number of those. I don't remember the episodes, but over the years, it was kind of fun to see those early television, black and white, of course. Then, while he was on the road with the play, called the Solid Gold Cadillac, which was to have wound up in Los Angeles, we got a call from Dad saying he got a call from two guys whose names some of your listeners might know, Billy Wilder, mm-hmm. great director, and Leland Hayward, producer, wanted Dad to do a movie. out in California with Jimmy Stewart.
And that movie was?
It was The Spirit of St. Louis. Mm-hmm. And so it happens that that is very close to me, as I went to school with Scott Lindbergh. Mm-hmm. Charles Lindbergh was, of course, about whom the story, and Jimmy Stewart played him in the movie Spirit of St. Louis, the first solo flight across the Atlantic. Scott Lindbergh never went inside their castle. Nobody did. That was off bounds because of things that happened,
right,
happened earlier in their lives or
the
earlier
tragedy.
In their history, the tragedy. And Scott's sister and I sat next to each other in the junior high school orchestra. She was in eighth grade, played the English horn. I played the oboe. And then my brother went to school with their younger brother and sister. So I knew the family and met their mother, Anne. But I never met
Charles
Lindbergh. Did meet Jimmy Stewart, and he played the part. Every part he played was Jimmy Stewart. I mean, he put his mark on it.
Yeah.
And what a pleasure to have, and a privilege to have been able to talk with these people, and to have had my dad having a part of history, whatever it happened to be, in the movies he was in, or theater productions, radio, or the television productions.
So because of that call from Billy Wilder to your dad, you moved from
Connecticut
to California.
West Los Angeles, okay, where we lived, and from where Dad commuted on the freeways to work. Yes. So subsequently did a number of movies and many different TV shows.
I think The Spirit of St. Louis is definitely one of them. I'd like to kind of highlight two other ones. One was Sleeper. Your father works with Woody Allen.
That's right.
And his really experimental comedy.
Dad loved Woody Allen because he was a genius.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And still is. Mm-hmm. This guy is, with his sense of humor and his way of making things work, I'm certain you would understand it better than I. But this guy's a genius.
Well, Woody Allen, apart from his marital decisions of late, I really think he had a Charlie Chaplin-esque kind of way of putting a film together with layers. It wasn't just a story, but it was a story that he was trying to make a point. He was trying to convey a message.
You know, I remember Dad just said almost the same thing. Dad forgot. That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
He said the same thing.
I do remember when the movie came out, and it was, you know, in the 70s, but I remember Grandpa being really excited and saying, you know, people really need to see this movie. You need to see how great, you know, Woody is, you know, in this, and how brilliant he wrote this. And just, I mean, he went on and on about how great it was. And I actually remember seeing it in the theater, not really understanding a lot of it because I was pretty young at the time. But, you know, having seen it years later, it's a pretty funny movie. I mean, there's some really, really interesting, funny parts to the whole thing. And, you know, it's kind of fun to watch Grandpa being Dr. Oravet, and even Grandpa's comic genius at the time. I mean, like you said, I mean, he's kind of one of those people that, you know, you may not know his name, you may not know who he is, but you know him on sight, you know him by voice.
True.
And it's very definite that, you know, he may
contrast make that role to his prosecuting attorney role in I Want to Live with Susan Hayward. Or
right,
other roles he did, you can see. And of course he played on how many different Gunsmokes, or...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's kind of funny to be watching a Saturday morning...
He even played a Leave It to Beaver.
Sure.
He played Leave It to Beaver.
Now, but before we jump into TV, I want to talk about one more film. Now, the interesting thing about Bart was that he did make specific choices, because theater work is really tough to kind of pull out and continue. It's not an 8-to-5 job. It's not a corporate job. And there's feast and famine at times. And so the decisions that he made to play certain movies, I think, were very interesting. I mean, working with Woody Allen, a very innovative actor, director. Billy Wilder, another great. But I want to talk about No Time for Sergeants. I mean,
that was a great straight
man. See, this film made Andy Griffith.
Oh, yeah.
Now, when most people talk about it, they talk about the scene in the latrine with the toilets that salute the general, I believe,
general,
who was your father.
Yes.
So that scene alone, I mean, really, no one, see, when people talk about that film, that's the scene they talk about. So it's interesting that your father was in that scene.
Right. It's funny because, I mean, it kind of goes back to that, the Twilight Zone. I mean, you know, that episode is truly one of the most popular episodes when they have these, you know, Twilight Zone marathons where fans can pick and choose the episodes they want to see. This is always in the top, it's always in the top 10. And not, more often than not, it's in the top 5.
Right.
I mean, it's you know, it's very, very highly requested. And interestingly enough is that the point where they realize what the book is, when they first get the title of the book, because of course they, you know, they don't understand the Kanamit language, and they, you know, they're trying to decipher and decode it. When the young woman discovers what the title is, she hands the slip of paper to Grandpa, and it's his hands that the camera is focused on, and it's his voice that says, "To serve man." I mean, he's the one who reveals what the title is, and while at that time he doesn't understand what, you know, they don't really understand what the book is about, He's you know, very in a critical moment of the episode, and it's funny because he's in, you know, several of these in several movies, and yet that's usually his the end of his role right there, or close to the end of the role. And so it's kind of interesting.
Well, he was also in another Twilight Zone that was called Back There.
Yes.
That was a time travel episode where he was John Wilkes Booth, I believe it was. But anyway, it was a time travel that centered around
Lincoln's assassination.
So,
and it was with Russell Johnson, the professor in Gilligan's Island, mm-hmm. which Grandpa did an episode of Gilligan's Island. Kind of
right.
That all worked out.
So let me just kind of rattle off just a few of the shows he was in. And again, this is just a few. Luke Grant, Cannon, The Odd Couple, Kung Fu, Mannix, The Virginian, Bonanza, Green Acres, Petticoat Junction, The Mod Squad, Y50, Here's Lucy, Ironside, The Wawa West, My Mother the Car, F Troop, Bewitched, The Munsters, Alfred Hitchcock Presents, Perry Mason, Leave It to Beaver, The Untouchables, Gunsmoke, Maverick, Playhouse 90, and the Philco Television Playhouse. These are really probably some pivotal shows. You have shows like Kung Fu, which was a trailblazer at the time. You know, you have Western shows like Gunsmoke and this and that, and it's interesting that he kind of weaved his role throughout all these shows, and it's just an interesting career for somebody who loved theater. He was such a good actor that probably most people that are listening, they go, "My gosh, I've seen that show a million times. He was in that show," and
yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to kind of go back and, you know, if you can start it at IMDb page and kind of work your way back, you'll see, oh my gosh, he's been in all these shows.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of funny, like I was saying earlier, you know, to be sitting there watching Saturday morning television, you know, they usually play, you know, Munsters or Gilligan's Island or Bewitched or whatever, and even sometimes watching, you know, Nick at Night, you see these shows again, and it's kind of funny, I'll be sitting there flipping through channels, and all of a sudden I'll see Grandpa, and I'll go, oh, that's that Munsters episode, or there's that Bewitched episode, or, oh, yeah, the Gilligan's Island. I mean, and again, it's that whole, you know, you're talking about the Westerns, you know, he'd be a bad guy on Bonanza one week, and the next week he'd be on Gunsmoke and be the good guy. And he just, and then the next week he might be back on Gunsmoke again, only this time he's the bad guy. He was just, he was so versatile, he had just so many different characters he could play.
Or the prosecuting attorney on The Untouchable, or the Perry Mason.
Right, mm-hmm. Exactly.
Or the main crook on Untouchables.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. He was every man.
Yeah.
Or, as you said, the sleeper where No Time for Sergeants, where he played a straight man.
Right. True.
It was funny seeing him, because, you know, just thinking about it, you burst into laughter.
True.
But here he is keeping a straight face.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure they laughed during the rehearsals. But
I imagine they did.
Yeah.
It had to be.
Yeah.
He also worked probably around Alfred Hitchcock. I don't know if he directed the shows, but I know for sure that he produced them. So,
Hitchcock?
You know, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Again, an interesting choices of really great producers, directors, writers, actors, for that matter. Let's kind of zone in and be a little more personal. Now, we've kind of talked about the Hollywood set and meeting Henry Fonda, those kind of folks. But let's talk about, there was a story where they were walking with the Roosevelts.
Actually, I think that was just Grandma. I don't think Grandma was there.
Okay.
I think Grandpa was probably working. But actually, that story did lead to, you know, some kind of interesting, I mean, it's funny to hear my grandparents tell these stories because, you know, it's a whole different era. You know, Grandma was telling me that they lived in New York in Greenwich Village, and they had a little apartment that was above, I think, an Italian deli. And Grandma had the dogs, and she was taking them out for a walk, and the dogs started to get away from her as she was trying to turn and lock the door, and they kind of pulled her down the steps, and she smacked right into this woman, and she stepped back and said, "Oh, I'm sorry," and she looked up, and it was Eleanor Roosevelt, and I stopped her, and I said, "Eleanor Roosevelt, the president's wife. When was this?" She goes, "Well, you know, it was during the early 40s. And I said, "But wait, he was in the White House at the time. You're talking to the First Lady." And she says, "Well, yes. She was a very lovely woman. She had very beautiful eyes. And she said, oh, it seems we've bumped. And noticed that, you know, we were walking, you know, our dogs together. And they took a walk down the street." And I said, "Grandma, how is that even possible?" And she said, "Well, now, dear, it was a different time, and things weren't quite the way they were, and, you know, we just went for our little walk, and as a result, they were invited to the White House a couple of times to have dinner with the president and his wife." And again, you know, here I am thinking, I mean, you say Eleanor Roosevelt, and pretty much every person on the planet knows who you're talking about, just about. And Grandma talks about her as if she was, you know, the little old neighbor lady. And it's kind of an amazing thing to talk about.
From New York City, as was Eleanor Roosevelt, there are stories galore about her. And she was every one of them. She was that kind of person. She was just so down to earth. I mean, always had money, but always was just plain old Eleanor Roosevelt.
Yeah, I mean, she walked her own dogs. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's... You wouldn't think so, but yeah, that's what.
And it's amazing the people that I had the chance to encounter as a boy. I was so blessed not to have had any of the negative stuff fed me in my life. Right. I have a great rapport with my memory of everybody that I ever encountered, mm-hmm. in whatever area we have to be in.
What was Thanksgiving and Christmas like in the Robinson?
Thanksgiving was a big deal. Mm-hmm. We always celebrated Thanksgiving. We had the big turkey, and Dad usually prepared the turkey, and mm-hmm. Mom was doing everything else. And it was a real family affair. We had my grandmother, and my grandfather usually was there occasionally, my mother's father, my brother and me, and Mom and Dad. And it was just a real nice time.
Yeah, and I mean, Grandpa preparing the turkey is not unusual. I mean, he was a gourmet. I mean, he really enjoyed cooking. And I can remember many years later, after my dad obviously growing up and having family Thanksgiving with us, we always had great Thanksgiving. And even Christmases were always really special too. Grandpa would fix dinner, and he was an amazing chef, actually. He created his own salad dressings. It sounds like a silly thing to remember, but I mean, honestly, that's one of the things I do remember, and that's one of the things I remember seeing is Grandpa in the kitchen, you know, mixing up his salad, mixing his dressing, and, you know, dealing with the prime rib or the turkey or whatever we happen to have, you know, for dinner that time, or I think we even had ham once, if I remember right. But, you know, he was always in the kitchen, and it's funny because that kind of carried over into his movies, especially in Spirit of St. Louis. There's a scene where he's cooking sand dabs over like a Bunsen burner or a whatever it was in the movie, and that was Grandpa actually doing the cooking. I mean, that was something he did. He cooked when he got the chance. He really enjoyed that. But Thanksgiving with Grandpa was, and Christmas were always really interesting as far as Grandpa was always entertaining. He would tell us stories of things that happened when he was growing up, or especially some of the people. He said his father was a political cartoonist, and one of great-grandfather's best friends was John Reed, who they made the movie Red in like the early 80s with Warren Beatty. Grandpa wasn't in that movie.
He was a colleague of John Reed's.
Right.
John Reed was a writer, and he and Reed were commissioned to go over to Eastern Europe, and hence the War in Eastern Europe book, and then Reed stayed, unfortunately, and he elected to join the Communist Party. There's a movie written about him, called Red. So
mm-hmm. Right.
Some people might know.
I know it's not much of a trade, but it must be nice now and again to see him on maybe a TV show here and there.
It is. Well, of course, as you say, I'm in the other room. I hear if he just has the TV on, his voice comes on. I'm there.
Right.
You know, I mean, and that's him.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
And sadly, a lot of the movies that are shown have been cut.
Right.
And Spirit of St. Louis, I saw it on TBN, Turner, or whatever.
TBS, yeah.
TBS. Mm-hmm. And I saw it, but it cut out the entire last scene he was that he was in. Mm-hmm. He had the only other speaking part in the movie.
Right.
The beginning and the end.
Yeah.
Right.
He cut out the end one. It showed the sand dab scene and at the beginning when the plane is being contract commissioned and built and so forth. However, the end where he, when he lands up, comes back to New York or wherever he goes, at the end of the movie, the scene is cut out.
Mm-hmm.
The speaking scene is cut for time's sake.
I understand that he built the home that was in Connecticut?
He built, well, he yes.
Okay.
The home we live, move, old house we moved to in Connecticut. It was 200 years old, we moved into it.
Right.
Obviously, it didn't have any insulation or heating, indoor plumbing, or our refrigerator or stove. So our first refrigerator was literally an ice box.
Mm-hmm.
Our first stove was a coal and wood stove, those big old metal iron things. Our only heat was a fire, two fireplaces, and we were afraid the house might blow up with those. There were plaster walls, no insulation, and two stories. It was, yes, rather it had to be, it was old. That I won't go into the what it
sure.
was before we moved there. But
now, when you moved to California, you moved to Malibu, correct?
Pacific Palisades. We lived there, rented for five
right.
years. Then we, Dad built a home in Malibu.
That's it.
He sold the property in Connecticut and built a house. Designed to build a house in Malibu.
Now, he designed and built a house.
Wow. It was his floor plan.
Wow.
He did. He also built another house in Connecticut first. Basically, he designed it and built it. He initially wanted to be an architect.
Okay.
He went to Carnegie Tech in those days. Today it's Carnegie Mellon. Carnegie Tech in Pittsburgh. He was only there for a year. He said, this is boring. He said, I can do this. I don't need to go to school to do this. He had his art talent from his dad and his mother, who mom studied, granny studied sculpture under Rodin. His grandpa taught art at Cambridge and Oxford in New York and Colorado Springs, in addition to doing art and frescoes and paintings all over the world. So a number of books. So this was something that was inbred. He knew the basics. 1 year at Carnegie Tech was enough. He said, I want to be an actor. Whether or not that was a good choice, I don't know. But that's where he spent 50 years of his life.
He was really a renaissance man. And it's funny because I don't think I ever knew that he went to Carnegie Tech. I don't think I ever knew that. I learned stuff about him even now.
Sure.
Amazing.
And I could probably tell you a lot more.
I think the interesting thing is he never, whenever his loves were, he always found a way to express them. However,
he did our Christmas cards every year. He would design and would be printed, lithographed. Mm-hmm. We had a lithographed Christmas card we sent out every year for, well, I remember 12 years at least that he did that. And that was his way of sharing what we did during the past year. We went to Nova Scotia where I learned to swim. Or, you know, everything was sort of being calculated on just a one-sided card. His career, mom, riding horses, me, at Boy Scout camper.
We're going to wrap it up. Sadly enough, he passed on in 86.
That's correct.
But we are really here to celebrate his life and the breadth of the work that he has done. And I really appreciate your time and for telling us some great stories and letting us know a little bit more inside of that guy that was in that To Serve Man Twilight Zone. This was a great show. I really enjoyed sitting down with my wife, Colleen, and my father-in-law, Michael, discussing Bart Robinson. And I hope you learned something. I know I did. Every time we talk about him, I learn some new story. So next show is going to be very different. It will probably be controversial. And I hope that if you do listen to it, you'll listen to the entire show and you'll know the heart from which it came, because it really comes from a good place. And I really want to, when I see something that's going on that's good, I want to highlight it, even though it may be different from where people think things should go. I really enjoyed talking to our guest next time. It was a great, great interview, and I hope that you'll join us next time for that. Until then, this is Jeff Roney saying, I'll talk to you next time. Roney Zone. Radio.